MoneyWeb now on the money.
The show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Chatting now with Chantal Marks, our head of research, F&B Wealth and Investment. Chatting MultiChoice. Chantal, morning, appreciate the early morning time. I want to get into the investment case for MultiChoice. Before I do, there's the Nigerian issue, the sort of in the corner. Nigeria is kind of prone to occasionally hit one of our JSE-listed companies with giant numbers. This time a 65.5 billion rand tax bill, if my conversion rates are right. Is this, I mean, if one was a MultiChoice investor, is this something to really worry about? Certainly, MTN negotiated some of their fines down a bit, some of them down quite markedly.
Yes, so I think the tax authority is actually a little bit easier to deal with because the laws governing the tax regime in Nigeria are quite set in stone. They're quite advanced. So when you are in front of a court, the law will likely take its course. What happened with MTN and that huge fine that really blew up their balance sheet as well a few years ago was the SIM registration debacle, the fact that they weren't registering SIMs quickly enough, and government actually accused them of, by not registering SIMs quickly enough, aiding the situation in the north of Nigeria, where they were really battling with terrorist groups. So a completely different scenario for MTN with that big fine. I think the MultiChoice fine was also taken out of context a little bit, because as MultiChoice indicated in the SENS announcement, it was going to be the lower of that disputed amount, the year previous plus 10% tax bill that they had to pay before appealing that amount. So I think it was a bit sensationalized as well.
Okay, so let's park Nigeria, and I take your point that the tax law is more codified. The SIM registration was a whole lot less so, and a lot more emotional around, as you say, the terrorism in the north. The investment case for it, I mean, a lot of folks look at it and think, oh no, it's DSTV, we're being overcharged, and people are shopping down from premium packages. But there's a lot more to it. There's the rest of the continent, which is growing fast. There's Showmax, which is looking to be the sort of Netflix of Africa. It's actually not a bad investment case here.
Yeah, absolutely. And I mean, people all hate DSTV, but they all have it because people love sport. Yeah. So I think sport is an underpin for DSTV subscriptions. So even though people are complaining about it around the braai, they won't miss the rugby or the soccer to save their lives, right? So they'll definitely, I think that that's an underpin. Their investment in local content is par none. And if you look at the kind of local content that we've been getting recently, the quality is fantastic. If you watch Devil's Door, Boreka. If you haven't watched it, please do. It's fantastic. And then you have this Rest of Africa business, which provides massive optionality and is basically valued at a negative value by the market. One must remember that in the Rest of Africa, you have underdeveloped broadband infrastructure, which means that the traditional MultiChoice business does quite well there. And you also have a situation where electrification is still taking place. And as electricity gets rolled out and continues to get rolled out across the continent, the first thing that people are going to invest in is their televisions and their entertainment. And I think that that's exactly where DSTV has quite a comfortable first mover advantage at the moment.
I see what you're saying there. I remember 15 years ago or so speaking to Wayne Sampson at Ellie's that they used to do DSTV installations and they couldn't keep up with demand as we were electrifying our more rural areas. I remember doing a road trip and the satellite dish was almost our national flower. You could drive anywhere in our country on the dirt, you know, the bumpiest of roads, and there were satellite dishes.
Yeah, and I think that that's another important thing to remember about MultiChoice is that they offer a variety of packages and price points. So even though you and I will think about a premium subscription and so expensive and you've got the Explorer and you don't even know if you're using it properly, the reality is that a lot of people are paying 25 to 30 rand a month for five or six channels with really clear quality. And that's good enough. That is good enough for them, given the price point. So you have to consider that there's more than just the Explorer package that they have on offer. And I think the tie-up on the Explorer package and on these kind of premium packages with the international streaming guys is brilliant. I think the involvement of, or the tie-up between Showmax and HBO is a really positive one. And I think the fact that Netflix and Amazon are willing to work with MultiChoice is a really positive thing. They're not necessarily looking to unseat the company. Sure, I mean, I think MultiChoice has its risks. Nigeria, wow.
Sure.
Currencies, whoa, and content costs continue to increase. But I do think that at the moment, and especially at the current discount that it's trading relative to its peers and its history, the positive outweighs the negative.
Yeah, I take that. There has to be some risk. If there isn't risk, there's no reward. And as you say, you're pretty much getting the rest of the continent for free for Mahala. Chantal Marx, Head of Research, FNB Wealth and Investment, appreciate your insights this morning. The show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit StanLib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.